Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Jackie Getz. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for today's call, which intends to provide current information on the rapidly evolving situation pertaining to novel coronavirus, also referred to as 2019 nCoV. This offering has been made widely available with the intent to reach all Missouri frontline care providers to include hospitals, clinics, emergency medical services, local public health agencies, and federally qualified health centers. My name is Jackie Gatz, Vice President of Safety and Preparedness with the Missouri Hospital Association, and today I am joined by counterparts from the Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services, which include Paula Nicholson, Administrator of the Office of Emergency Coordination, Rachel Hahn, Chief of Bureau of Communicable Disease Control and Prevention, and Sam Vance, Chief of the Bureau of EMS. Further, Cecilia Campbell and Aaron Schmidt, representing the Department of Natural Resources, have joined us to lend their expertise should questions be asked pertaining to waste management. We would like to first and foremost thank you all for your proactive work and information sharing that has occurred to date to protect the health and safety of Missourians. At this time, this is a standalone call. Should additional and ongoing interactive communication be necessary, a recurring call schedule will be established and widely distributed. This call is being recorded, and the recording will be posted on MHA and DHSS websites, as long as the content remains current. All lines are currently muted. At the conclusion of our remarks, there will be an opportunity for questions. The operator will provide instructions how to submit questions into the queue at that time. Given the anticipated participant volume on today's call, we ask that questions be framed broadly and in the best interest of all participants. Specific questions pertaining to your plan may be better addressed through email. As indicated in the announcement, this call will not focus on clinical information, and we continue to encourage clinicians to participate in the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention COCA call scheduled for tomorrow at 1 p.m. We'll start our formal remarks today by providing a current high-level summary of the situation. Note that this incident is rapidly evolving, and this information is subject to change. Currently, six cases of the 2019 nCoV have been confirmed in the United States across four states. As of today, CDC has confirmed that one person-to-person spread has been identified, an individual living with the diagnosed patient in Chicago, Illinois. The World Health Organization just moments ago has designated a public health emergency of international concern for this outbreak. Airport medical screening procedures, which were initially in place in Atlanta, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York City, and San Francisco, have now been expanded to 15 other U.S. airports. I think it's important for Missouri providers to know that St. Louis and Kansas City airports are not included in the expanded list of airports at this time. These 20 locations will screen all incoming travelers from China, isolate those with symptoms, and educate those without symptoms about what to be on alert for and how to manage potential illness. Now, I'd like to turn it to Paula Nicholson to address DHSS actions to date.
Thanks, Jackie. Good afternoon. As Jackie said, my name is Paula Nicholson. I'm the Administrator for the Office of Emergency Coordination at the Department of Health and Senior Services. On Monday, DHSS stood up Incident Command, and we are robustly monitoring various national calls with federal partners as well as applicable websites. As well, on Monday, we established a website specific to the 2019 novel coronavirus at www.health.mo.gov/coronavirus, which will be routinely updated and provide links to various resources, including the taping of this audio shortly thereafter. In addition to this collaboration with Missouri Hospital Association, we've had numerous other outreach efforts occurring throughout this week to include with the Missouri State Medical Association, with the various student health centers around the state, and both Kansas City International and Lambert International Airports, as well as the health departments, EMS agencies, and emergency management agencies supporting those two airports. Currently, for your awareness, only CDC is conducting testing for the novel coronavirus, which they are reporting takes approximately 24 to 48 hours to obtain results. Our department is involved in making recommendations whether testing should occur based upon CDC's PUI criteria. The Missouri State Public Health Laboratory does anticipate being prepared to conduct this testing when CDC makes protocols and or the reagents available. However, we're told that some state laboratories may be prioritized before others to begin testing, dependent upon need. Currently, the FDA is considering an emergency use authorization to allow the state public health laboratories this capability. The Department of Health and Senior Services encourages local public health agencies to notify their local health care providers if they anticipate an individual with whom they are working or monitoring may require testing to allow the healthcare facility to be prepared for a controlled entry of the individual to be tested. Further, the Department of Health and Senior Services is directing Missourians demonstrating symptoms to first contact their provider by phone before presenting for testing. Healthcare providers should immediately notify infection control personnel within their own facility and their local or state health department of a patient under investigation for the novel coronavirus. Also on Monday of this week, January 27th, Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services executed our general authority to require immediate reporting under 19 CSR 20-2020 and filed an emergency rule on Monday to require suspected cases of the 2019 novel coronavirus to be immediately reported. The emergency rule has a 10-day effective date, which begins February 10th, 2020. And I'll hand it back to Jackie.
Thank you, Paula. I'm going to take a few minutes and talk about frontline care providers and some of the information that you should be thinking through reviewing as you prepare your facilities. So on Monday, MHA also stood up Incident Command to proactively monitor, assess, and communicate with hospitals, healthcare providers, and healthcare coalition members. MHA has established a dedicated website, which can be found in the What's Trending section on the MHA homepage at www.mhanet.com. Frontline providers caring for patients entering the healthcare delivery system should certainly be taking this opportunity to review their employee health, infection prevention, and pandemic influenza plans to ensure adequate preparation and readiness. CDC has made preparedness checklists available for healthcare providers and hospitals, and that is currently listed on our website. We cannot underscore the importance of implementing screening questions which identify symptoms and travel history at all points of entry. This pertains to hospitals, physician offices, clinics, EMS providers, dispatch centers, and local public health agencies providing clinic services. While DHSS is directing Missourians demonstrating symptoms to first contact their provider by phone before presenting for testing, providers should not assume that this will occur each time. Specific guidance, resources, and public-facing signage to guide the evaluation of patients under investigation are readily available on the CDC, DHSS, and MHA websites. Proper use of personal protective equipment is also essential to protect our healthcare workforce. CDC currently recommends a cautious approach to patients under investigation for the 2019 NCOV and has expanded interim guidance for healthcare professionals and infection control before and during healthcare delivery. If you have not already done so, please read the interim guidance for infection control, which includes 8 recommendations to evaluate the readiness of and to safeguard your environment of care. Supply chain management, given concurrent seasonal influenza and anticipated fear of a more widespread 2019 NCOV outbreak in the United States, will be critical. Just today, MHA conducted our weekly widespread enhanced flu query and found that the number of adult inpatients in Missouri hospitals has doubled in the last week. For those that reported. Currently, we are reporting 118 inpatient flu adult patients in our hospitals. While it is a marked increase that we need to monitor. I think it's most important that we think about the resource constraints that this will begin to place on our providers, considering also that supply chains will become a little more restricted as this virus continues to grow globally. Given these developments, we are in the early stages of developing a resource supply integrity query for hospitals and EMS providers across the state. We are anticipating that we will launch the baseline query on Monday of next week, and more information will be forthcoming on that. Regarding waste, the interim CDC guidance for NCOV states that management of laundry, food service utensils, and medical waste should also be formed in accordance with routine procedures. In closing of our formal remarks, we would like to highlight a few key takeaways from today's call. While the risk of widespread outbreak remains low in the U.S. based on what we know as of today, we most certainly have the opportunity to closely monitor the situation, review our plans, and implement the appropriate precautions to be ready. Please take this opportunity to do so within your organizations. This remains a rapidly evolving situation. Interim guidance will change. Frequent communication and coordination is necessary. Infection prevention strategies are critical, and we must still remember, as I've referenced, it is flu season. Like the flu, coronavirus is a respiratory virus, and the following measures should be followed. Employers should aggressively stress the importance of frequent and thorough hand washing with their employees, patients, staff, and visitors. Cough and sneeze etiquette, use of tissues, including proper disposal and hand washing, should be reviewed. Frequent cleaning of surfaces should be performed, especially those with the public have contact. And finally, employees with fever should be asked to stay home from work or to be sent home from work. Updates and future information from DHSS and MHA will be disseminated through normal health and medical communication chains to include the Health Alert Network, executive, clinical, and discipline-specific listservs, and our healthcare coalitions. Information will also remain readily available on the MHA and DHSS websites to include a recording of this call. At this time, I'd like the operator to open the portal for questions. And again, for those of you submitting a question, we'd ask that you please announce yourself with your organization.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. And our first question comes from Jerry Wilms with Mosaic Life Care.
Yes, thank you. My question has to do with travel. You mentioned that they did expand an additional 15 airports. So just to clarify, if a person, we just found out today that there is a person traveling from China scheduled to get to Maryville, Missouri, February 6th. So they would be rerouted to one of the airports that's been approved for screening or been designated for screening.
Thank you, Jerry. We are discussing here. We don't believe with confidence that we can say they will be rerouted to those. Those, as I understand it, the 20 airports that have been identified have a higher travel pattern from China and are more active internationally. But I have not read anything definitively that all routes from China will be through those 20 airports. That's something that I can look into, and I'll follow up with you offline.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Robbie Myers of Healthcare Coalition.
Hey, actually, it's from Laura Bennett with the John J. Pershing of VA Medical Center.
Yes, so I was just wondering, we currently send out our cultures to the Missouri State Lab. Would that still be the protocol for any specimens collected from persons under investigation, and if so, would they still be just a Category B?
So this is Rachel Hahn. I'm the chief of the Bureau of Communicable Disease Control and Prevention with the Department of Health and Senior Services. So the specimens to be collected are upper and lower respiratory specimens and serum. In addition, you can collect stool and urine for testing later. CDC is sometimes asking for those later. And right now, CDC, because they're the only location with the testing available, we arrange testing to go straight to CDC. But please make sure you call us just to make sure we can evaluate to make sure the person meets the PUI case definition. And at that point, we'll work with our state lab to make sure that we get a number from them. That's important because that ensures that we get the results back and can share them with providers as soon as possible.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Tim Dykus, South Scott County Ambulance District.
You mentioned on your statement that there was a list of questions that healthcare providers should ask potential contacts. I've been looking through your website, and I don't locate those questions anywhere.
Okay. Rachel will address it.
Sure. So the two features that we look at for individuals who might be PUIs, what we call patients under investigation, are clinical features. So those are things that indicate a respiratory illness. So fever and symptoms of lower respiratory illness to include cough or difficulty breathing. And then the specific questions you'll probably have to ask the patient are related to travel. And right now, in order to meet the case definition, they have to have fever and those symptoms we talked about. And they also have to have travel in the last 14 days prior to symptom onset. A travel history to Wuhan City in China, or they can have close contact with a person under investigation, or close contact with a laboratory-confirmed patient. And if you want to look that up, it's in a handy chart on the Interim Guidance for Healthcare Professionals on the CDC website.
Thank you.
It's also on the PUI form, which is a little bit further down from that chart.
Thank you.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press star 1. We'll take our next question from Helen Sankol of FFM Healthcare. And if you're muted, please unmute. Helen, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
We can hear you now.
Hello? Okay. I'm over our regional EMS for SSM, and we're pretty concerned about our EMS providers answering calls. So we've discussed some issues with our 911 dispatchers, and they're going to add if anybody has been visiting out of the country within the last 4 to 6 weeks and where that has been, and if they're having respiratory symptoms or signs of pneumonia, we're letting our EMS guys know to make sure that when they get to the site that they have masks on, and also that the patient has a mask on if they're not having any respiratory distress. Is anybody else doing anything like that?
Helen, this is Jackie. I've heard discussion of the best way to communicate to EMS in a timely manner is to go through dispatch. So I know other communities are looking at that, but I can't speak to, I haven't collected information on how many dispatch centers have added that.
So we're
yeah, hey, Helen.
But to practice respiratory etiquette.
I'm sorry, Helen, could you repeat your question? This is Sam Vance.
Hi, Sam. No, we are just really asking our EMS to remember to practice respiratory etiquette, and if you're not sure, it's better to wear a mask than not to wear a mask.
Yeah, and at this time for EMS, that's pretty much the protocol is to just follow your standard precautions as far as what you would normally do for your personal protective equipment. And if the patient does exhibit those signs and symptoms of the acute febrile lower respiratory infection, that you'd pay, put the surgical mask on the patient and would advise that you all would as well. What they are obtaining when they call 911 as far as the travel history or close contact with someone under investigation for the coronavirus, that the crew should also be asking the individuals that information when they arrive on scene. As you know, sometimes when we arrive on scene, the information that they give to dispatch is not necessarily the same that we get when we're on scene. Then you should have the EMS providers notify the receiving hospital according to their local protocols of the potential infection as soon as possible so the ER can prepare for them. And then use caution with any aerosol-generating procedures and properly doff and dispose of the PPE according to their protocols. And then obviously clean and disinfect using the EPA-registered disinfectants with known effectiveness against human coronaviruses, and then the waste management per policy using the red medical waste bags.
Sounds good.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Brenda Higgins with Truman State University Student Health Center.
Hi, I had a question. I believe I heard you say that in order to be considered a PUI, you had to have a fever. And I thought from the CDC website it said respiratory symptoms and or fever, that fever did not have to be as a criteria.
So this is Rachel again. So there's a couple different classifications you can look at for PUI. So CDC has stated, even though they list fever, that some individuals will not exhibit a fever. So that is important to remember. So there are two basic categories that they put people in. So it's fever and low respiratory symptoms for those with travel in the last 14 days and for those with exposure to somebody in the 14 days prior to onset to a PUI. However, it's fever or symptoms if it's somebody with a close contact to a laboratory-confirmed patient. So that's an important distinction. I thank you for the question.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Don Wilkinson, Oklahoma State Department of Health.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
You mentioned earlier about a list of various methods that you were using to get your message out to the public, both by, I presume, by email, by website addresses and public announcements. How are you intending to reach out to your non-English-speaking communities, your at-risk populations, and those who may not have access to computers and other means of communication?
Thanks for the question, Don. No, it's a great question and one that we've been talking about. We don't have a firm plan yet on the non-English speaking, and we're listening yesterday to the ASTO Directors of Public Health Preparedness discussion about states, and we're hoping that we'll be able to model some of that work. Oklahoma, have anything you want to share with us?
Well, we have various methods available to us. We, of course, have a very large tribal population here. And we have an excellent healthcare coalition that has the means to reach out, but we do try to get our community partners as much involved as possible in order to disseminate that message to as many people as possible. We understand, too, that we're not going to be able to reach everyone, and that's sort of a given with the way it works. I know in some parts of Missouri, especially up around Jamestown and up in the Northwest, you have an Amish population and a Mennonite population up there that don't have access to those sorts of things. So it's a challenge we all face. Hopefully the methods that we're trying to use here in Oklahoma to reach out to our public will get the message out. Besides using information we post on our websites with all of our health departments and with the state, they also have announcements that come out periodically by television, and also I believe they put PSAs out on local radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Wallace Patrick of Buchanan County EMS.
Oh, I was just going to respond to Helen's about dispatch. Helen, we've instructed our dispatch to, on anything non-traumatic, to drill down and determine if there is a possibility of a respiratory component and give our crews that heads up. And then, of course, the crews will give the hospital heads up. So we've instituted that and changed that into our electronic medical records so that those are screens that have to be answered one way or another.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Robbie Myers of the Healthcare Coalition.
Yes, actually, it's Cheryl Talkington.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
So we have a student right now that is in China that is due back the end of February, a kindergarten student. There are siblings here as well, but they did not go, so it's just the parents and the student. Since our airports are not in the screening population, what can we do in that instance? I mean, can we exclude that student for the 14 days prior to letting her back in school, or are we not allowed to do that?
So this is Rachel. We don't currently have any recommendations for exclusion. And I think that the cards that individuals traveling from China were distributed earlier this week that CDC is handing to individuals leaving planes that might be screened and be okay, just to keep that in mind. Anybody who is asymptomatic, there's no reason to exclude them. Individuals are not advised to seek care until they develop symptoms.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Steve Dugan, Lake Regional Health Systems. Please unmute if you're muted, sir.
Yeah, this is question is probably for Sam Vance on the EMS side. If we have a patient that's being brought to the hospital via the ambulance that is highly suspicious of the virus, once we get them to the hospital and we're doing the testing on the patients, do we hold the ambulance crews for a period of time?
That's a good question. As of now, I don't know personally, and I'm not sure if anybody else in the room knows the answer to quarantining any of the first responders or other healthcare personnel that would be treating these individuals. So I will open that up to the other panelists here for their expertise.
Hi, this is Rachel again. Sure. So essentially, there's no need, as far as I'm aware, for EMS to be quarantined after transporting a patient. I will let everybody know that as part of communicable disease follow-up and investigation, if we do have somebody who tests positive, then contact investigations will take place at that point. And if there is a concern for EMS, depending on the length of the trip, I have a feeling we'll probably factor into that. That might be something that we would reach out to those folks for. So no need to quarantine ahead of time of a diagnosis, I don't believe.
Thank you. At this time, we have no questions in queue. So we did have one second question here. It comes from Jerry Wilms with Mosaic Life Care.
I'm sorry. This is purely speculative, but I have been following CDC and DHSS and all that. Do we have any sense, and as was already mentioned, this is rapidly evolving, do we have any sense that we're anywhere close to any kind of, travel restrictions to and from between the U.S. and China? I saw something where they were weighing that. Or is that way down the road, or?
So that's a decision that's made at the national level as far as shutting down travel. Just in my media reviews this morning, I saw that there was some considerations, but we don't make that decision
right
at our level. Thank you.
Thank you again.
Operator, do we have additional questions?
No questions in the queue at this time.
Okay. Well, again, the intent of this call was to proactively engage and communicate with our frontline healthcare providers. We around this table, and I know each of you will continue to monitor this closely, our primary action following today's call is to discuss the hospital and EMS supply chain integrity query, which will be forthcoming most likely through your healthcare coalition contacts with an anticipated release of early next week. So at this time, I'd like to thank everybody for participating and for the engagement and questions. This recording will be made available and distributed on our website and through appropriate listservs. And thank you for participating. I'll adjourn the call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.